All right, here we are again.
in our separate windows.
As per usual. So yeah, back to normal. Sandy is here gnawing her leg for
in
some
my
reason.
Space.
Sandy, why are you doing that? why are you doing that? She's got an ear infection. In both ears. I've been dealing with a cold this week. I'm finally like 90 to 95% better today. And Sandy, why are you doing that?
Dang, I didn't get sick at all.
You don't normally do
that. I've just been charging ahead, I guess. Yeah, well, thank you, Robert Lino. The M2 Complete Works documentary has spread its wings and flown away.
Yeah, it's been a long time coming.
Yeah, it was almost surreal to do it to release it, but wow, it was the reaction has been really good.
Yeah,
I this last week, there's nothing I can do about it now, but of course I'm like, oh, I hope that I cover the things that people want to hear about, and I hope that it lives up to people's expectations.
Well, no one has like said anything at all about like, oh, you didn't include, all this Sega Ages stuff that wasn't available yet. You didn't include Castlevania Collection. You didn't include the Genesis Classic, etc.
Yeah, and I'm glad. I'm glad that it was that the ending felt like it was kind of open ended enough that it was that people would understand, you can't put all that stuff in there. I mean, there's certain things that I did miss or skip over throughout, but I mean, I think that we covered pretty much probably a good 98% of their game
library. It's close enough to Complete Works to call it Complete Works. It is in the spirit of a Complete Works.
Right.
But there was a little confusion, but not as much confusion as I expected, honestly, regarding the subtitles. I think I saw someone comment that English YouTube, is very confused about subtitles.
Yeah, I mean, you don't
Which,
have to
I mean,
read
to be fair,
subtitles.
I was confused at first too, because there's the
English and then there's English Japanese translation.
Right. I was confused at first too, because there's that icon that pops up in the corner that's like, for subtitle options, click the sprocket, blah blah blah. But I like the icon that you click never registered in my head as that gear or sprocket or whatever it is, because I always see that little red HD on top of it. Like, to me, I just think of that as video settings. I didn't think of that as like subtitles and stuff. So
yeah, I mean, there were some people saying, oh, why wasn't it burnt in? And that's because we wanted to give lots of different options.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And hey, I mean, in the optimal situation that you know both English and Japanese, you could enjoy it subtitle free.
Right, exactly. I mean, there was, it just didn't make sense, I guess, to burn them in for this.
Yeah, it. The English speaking world, I think, is used to burnt in subtitles when needed, but we didn't. Mm-hmm. I feel it is more professional to present this with all the variable options that we were able to provide, which is, I still kind of can't believe that we were able to launch it with the options that we were.
Right. It is, they're not burned in on the Blu-ray either. They're subtitle tracks on there. And you can just go to the menu on the Blu-ray and choose what you want, and it will automatically take you back to the main menu to play it, and it'll play with your selection.
Yeah, so it's good to have that out there. The reaction has been positive, and don't forget that there's also a separate Q&A session with the with the Shot Triggers team. Like, Shot Triggers is the series that, well, you streamed it the other week that Valgerga is part of. So we have a interview with Hori again, as well as two of the Shot Triggers team. Mm-hmm. kind of answering just sort of, it's just sort of a Q&A. I almost think of it like an Iwata Asks type of thing, which was kind of this very spur of the moment thing that happened, but I'm actually very happy with how it turned out.
Yeah. It's like 38 minutes long. It gets a lot more in depth with the development of the Shot Trickers games and kind of how Battle Garaga works, because it has a very very complicated scoring system. So it kind of gets into that and kind of how they came to be, like, to make it and all this other stuff. It's I think that people that are interested in that, like, in the shooting game genre are going to be. They're going to really be interested in it.
So that's going to release in 1 to 2 weeks, kind of depending on how our follow-up projects are coming together. So
right. I'm leaning more towards it's probably going to be 2 weeks from today. And then, you know, that gets us in that rhythm of 2 weeks. Even though, like, the Q&A will not be, you know, it's not a typical episode. It's just, like, kind of a bonus feature. But, I mean, it's significant in its length. And I think that people will find that there's some pretty interesting technical information in there.
So you went to Cincy Classic, which is like the return of a convention that was in Cincinnati and went away, and this is like the first year back.
Yes, I was there yesterday. It was really good. I kind of didn't know what to expect. It was kind of like in this kind of a side room to this bigger store. I mean, it's very, like, the location was very weird. But I mean, it was kind of packed all day. There's some amazing vendors. Got to see our old friend Carlson from Mad Gear.
Yeah.
Was there. Who I always think it's funny because I don't know exactly where he's from, but he's obviously from someplace closer to here. So we first met him at MAGFest in like 2013 or something like that. And we see him, we've seen him at too many games. I've seen him at Korg's, which is like Columbus, Ohio Retro Gaming Society show.
So he goes he goes to smaller Mideast conventions because they must be more accessible to wherever he is.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it's always good to see him. His name is Carlson, and you know, my last name is Carlson, so we always. And he was excited about the M2 documentary.
Oh, really? Did he know about it before?
Yeah, he's like, I can't wait to watch it.
Oh, so he had seen it before you even told him about it.
He had seen
the trailer. Well, that's funny because I was actually on Friday. I was in Winston-Salem, going to my cousin's son's high school graduation, and I went to a little shop there called Game On, and the guy running the shop, you know, he was he was excited to see me. And I mentioned something about the M2 coming soon. He's like, oh yeah, I saw the trailer for that. So I guess a lot of people got excited about that.
Yeah, it was, but the show was a lot of fun. I did a panel with Tyler Hoegel, who made you know, Night Trap and Double Switch, and another game that he just finished 2 days ago.
Oh.
So, which you'll probably be hearing around E3, I'm guessing.
Oh, interesting. So, you also ran, and I mean, they had some people with tables, like Retro Access had a table. I know Jason from Game Tech had a table, and that was kind of what got the idea in your head. That we should stream the GBA Consolizer tonight, because Jason had GBA Consolizer there that you could try.
Yeah, he was showing them off there, and they're up for pre-order on his site. And he lent me one of the ones like this. They have the screen removed.
Now, are they selling that style, or are they only selling the ones in like the full case?
I don't know.
I think the full case one that I've got here. You know, it doesn't look like a GBA with a growth on its face, which I am not opposed to that look. But the one inside, like, the full case is neat, but it's plugged in and stuff. So I'm not gonna,
in a way, you know, like, this is kind of cool because if you wanted to use the system, you probably could. I mean, he told me,
oh, like, oh, you mean the, as a controller, you mean?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's,
I mean, there's
that's
an appeal to that. For sure.
There is. Of course, there'd be a whole bunch of wires coming out of it.
Or just the two, really. Just the two from the top. Or maybe an or a headphone jack, too, if you need
to
use that.
I'm going to switch it over to the screen. I'm going to turn the volume back up. So I'm actually using...
like the previous firmware, right? Like a one point.
I'm well. Let's find out. The hotkey is selected down. So I'm 1.0.1. I don't know if
it's... Okay, yeah, that's what this is. That's,
oh,
that's
okay. Right. Yeah, I was pretty sure it was up to date. So I mean, I'll go ahead and stop. I used to own this game. This is F-Zero GP Legend. It's like this. It's the second F-Zero game on.
You're gonna play a bunch of stuff.
I'm gonna play a little bit of a variety, but I just kind of wanted to like start a file in this, just because I used to have this. I beat it. There's like a story mode. I don't think I'm gonna pay attention to it.
Three, two, ready. Do you want to? Show some of the options.
Yeah. Let me do the race with just like
play a race and then.
Yeah. The I got this game when you were here.
Right.
Because I used to own it and I remember thinking it was pretty okay. I liked it more than the first. Wonderful. The first one on GBA. It's interesting
I Maximum Velocity is okay.
It's weird. Like, it doesn't have any of the normal characters and cars or anything. It's weird. This one is like more in the universe. But my biggest memory with this game is I was playing it. I was visiting my cousin. And I was riding. We went to the state fair, and I was riding the Ferris wheel with my cousin's husband, and I like was walking out of the Ferris wheel, and he found my GBA SP like had fallen out of my pocket on the seat, so I almost lost. My GBA SP and my F-Zero GP Legend at the county fair. in terms of options, I don't know how clearly this will come across on the, maybe if I do the zoom up, you can see like the,
there you go.
Actually, oh, that's interesting. The smoothing doesn't work, I guess, when it's not an integer scale. That may be the case. It looks like smoothing only works when using the default sizing or the it's 720p output, but like it looks like I'm actually pretty impressed with how my 4K TV deals with it. I think it might almost be sharper than how it scales to 1080p.
Woozle is in the chat.
Oh, hey, Woozle. Okay, so there we go. He says smooth is only on 4X. The 5X is for like Game Boy and Game Boy Color. The shader is just like different. Like, this is not a good screen to really show it, but it's just like different color palettes that are meant to like look like how it looks off screen of different systems. So you've got like GBA, 3D, 2DS, PSP, and stuff. And then there's gamma boost options. The palette.
Go back to gamma, because the one I was looking at yesterday, it had a 2.4. Yes, which I assume is for the games that were really bright.
Oh,
that they kind of like blew up the colors before there was a backlight.
I'm actually not seeing like an obvious difference, at least not on this screen. I don't know, that might be like a reboot thing. I don't know.
And it's definitely happening yesterday with when I was trying it.
The palette is like that. That's for our original Game Boy, and I'll do that later. The scan lines are really neat, though. I don't know if they're really going to come across.
Oh yeah, they're
super cool. They're awesome. Like, there's three different levels of like a grid style LCD screen overlay. That's really neat. It probably looks kind of interesting the way it comes across on the stream. And then you've got your typical horizontal only scan lines, three levels of depth there. But obviously for a stream, Sandy, do you need to sit on my lap? You can sit on my lap. Come on. So these are the settings that I like to use right now for, I haven't done a whole lot of like testing with like color palettes or gamma or anything like that yet. You could also do like some, you know, real fine tuning on the colors if you want. Now, you've got AB swap because it does use a Super Nintendo controller. So like if it's a game where using A to jump and B to attack feels weird, you know, you can switch that to Y and B if you want.
That's cool. That's really cool.
Just like the Super Game Boy lets you do the same thing, of course. So the DVI mode that was in that in that menu, it's interesting. Like, I mean, you know, like DVI is not a audio over DVI is like not part of the DVI spec. So whenever it is implemented, it's always like kind of a hacky thing,
right?
And
what is the GC video call it? They call it like,
they call it DVI. This is called DVI Plus, I think.
Right.
I keep trying to remember what it was called. Now, the interesting thing is like, the GC video DVI output mode, the digital output audio does work like on my setup. No problem here. It doesn't work on the Denon receiver for some reason. It works directly to my TV. It works directly to my capture card. Did I not actually go to the next? I think I accidentally didn't go to the next mission.
DVI Plus is basically a way to avoid saying HDMI when
audio is enabled. Well, kind of, yes. But again, like, with it running in DVI mode, it doesn't necessarily, it doesn't necessarily, like, fit the DVI specifications. So, in this case, it can have compatibility issues. Same with the GC video, it's just that GC video is compatible in my setup. So what I'm doing, I'm actually running you do have access to the analog audio jack, and Woozle actually talked me into
being
sat using the audio.
Well, just using the analog audio, because I already had run this analog audio cable going through a ground loop isolator to eliminate the buzzing noise for the 3DS capture situation.
Mm-hmm.
I put the GBA consoleizer right next to it, so I can just use the same cable between them. And it sounds really good, actually. Apparently there can be, I can switch to Captain Falcon. Apparently there can be like some, I think it may be just a couple of games, like some audio pops because of the way that, I think the GBA uses like a weird sample rate, like 30. Mm-hmm.
So it slowly 33,000
something. Well, I don't know if it falls out of sync, but I mean, or maybe it could if, you know, it wasn't implemented a certain way. But, he kind of talked me into pulling it from the jack is like the more authentic way to do it.
So how did you get that into your receiver then?
I'm happy with how I did it. So it's running, it's a long run across the room, to the ground loop isolator, and then into this external USB sound card I have, and then it's actually fiber optic out of my computer's built-in card, because I couldn't. if I for whatever reason, if I did the fiber optic out of the same card that I put it into, I couldn't find a way to output that fiber audio without it also outputting to my computer speakers, which I didn't want to do. So I have it coming out of my built-in sound on the motherboard all the way back around the room to the DIN receiver. And that, I have it set up in the settings to when it detects analog, or no, it's playing the analog audio by default. But then when it detects HDMI audio, it overrides the analog audio. So it cuts out the analog audio and switches over to the digital audio. So that it doesn't impact anything else that I have going on that input. It works great. I don't think I'm explaining it very well, but it works great.
Really quick, as a side thing, I see that they got Jimmy Hoppe in the chat. Ah. He says, currently slaving away at the job. Just want to drop by and say I'm glad the M2 DAC is finally out after all these months. Japan around too soon, I hope, and hopefully with a looser schedule.
I hope so, too.
The role that Jimmy played in this is, like, it cannot be understated or overstated. I don't know. That's a perfect, good way to say that. Like, he... Like, everything went the way it did in Japan because of him. We would...
Oh, yes.
I feel like everything would have fallen apart. I mean, seriously, our interview with Hori was, like, on a Sunday, and our interpreter, like, couldn't make it that day. And Jimmy had, like, having basically no experience as an interpreter, like, did it and was amazing.
Yeah, it was...
I mean, I cannot... like. We owe such a ridiculous amount to him. It's incredible.
No, it's something wrong with Captain Falcon's engine. I haven't been watching the story. But yeah. He kind of stalled at the start. I am not playing this game very well. It seems it's more difficult to control this game than I remembered. But I'm sure I got used to it.
Four laps to go. Holy cow. Like, I mean, the role that, like, the help that Jimmy gave us is amazing. Like, I do not know how everything would have happened without him.
We also would have spent a lot less money without Jimmy.
Yeah, we would have spent a lot less money.
Because we wouldn't have found any of those great stores.
Nowhere to go.
We would have had no clue.
Yeah.
We probably would have just eaten at 7-Eleven every day.
Probably. I probably would have, like,
subsisted on more calorie mates.
Yeah, which I still, you know, I still kind of consisted of calorie mates most of the time. But.
Yeah, that was your before bed snack every day. Yeah.
We got Enigma from Unbox TV series asking, hey guys, I'm looking to capture some gameplay footage of Final Fantasy VII with my Framemeister. What would be the best system to capture from? You mean versus like a Switch version or PS4 version or the real?
Yeah, I mean, I would lean towards, you know, the original version on original hardware, like, is the default. But I mean, from what I've seen, like I know the PS4 version looks pretty darn nice from the little bit I've played. I mean. Not much. You know, I assume the Switch and Xbox One versions look similar. But I would, for my purposes, I would, like, if I was going to make a video about Final Fantasy VII, I would want it to primarily use the original version. You know, I mean, right. Especially if you got a Framemeister and you can make it look nice, you know, make the 240p look sharp. I would use the original hardware in RGB or a PS2 if that's easier for you to use.
You won first place.
You know. Yeah, I mean, I think that probably the biggest benefit of, like, the Switch version is probably the, like, the cheat function, like, will make it probably easier to make it through the game quickly. Yeah, Switch is the PC port.
Right, but it's kind of like an updated PC port that they released several years ago with, like, some changes to make it kind of work better on modern systems, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to switch. I might, I'm not sure if I'll have the settings the way I might want them, because this is something I haven't experimented with a ton, is using the palettes with regular Game Boy games.
Oh, cool. I see that, so Woozle is saying, is giving the link of where you can get, where you can pre-order the console, GBA Consolizer kit.
Okay, so that is definitely not the palette I want to use, because the default palette for Kirby games on Game Boy Color / Advance is really horrible.
You can have like kind of a green, right?
Correct, but see, so this is something that I haven't quite played around with enough here, but there are multiple palettes, and these are taken from the Super Game Boy, I believe this default Super Game Boy palettes, actually, which is actually really appealing. Unfortunately, Kirby's Dream Land 2 is a Super Game Boy Enhanced game, which obviously won't work because that uses Super Nintendo hardware to make it happen. So you can't use, like, the enhanced palettes. But I can use other Super Game Boy palettes. Select any palette, save, and reboot. Woozle, do you know which one is, like... I like the one on the Super Game Boy that is the fourth page. The one on the very last palette. Fourth page on the far right. Do you know which one that is? Do I have to choose the...
Like E5 or something, he's saying?
Do you have to choose...
The tan one?
Do I have to choose the black and white palette, like hold the button combination for the black and white palette when I boot the GBA to do that? Because I don't... Okay, I don't have to do that. Okay, so let me reboot.
Just save a palette on reboot, and the consolizer will put it in the grayscale.
Oh, okay. But I think, isn't this... I feel like, see, this is something that confused me before, because I feel like that is the first palette on the first page. And I think I saw that on other pages. But then there's just gray... See, if I switch between these on grayscale, I mean, I understand that it's got reboot, but
I see.
Let me just choose a random one. I'll just choose like D4. Let's see what that looks like. Yeah, this is something that I need to play around with a lot more before I'm ready to make a video. See, it's the same one. So that I think I'm doing something wrong.
Only the first time that you select any palettes. Oh, you don't have to save them. You don't have to save and reboot. Only the first time you select any palette.
But like all of the palettes are just alternating between that one, which I think is the GB Super Game Boy default.
He says I'll write up a better guide.
Okay, yeah. I'm still confused, but it's interesting. I mean, I love the idea that the Super Game Boy palettes are in there because I like a lot. I like those more than the Game Boy Color palettes. I don't like the Game Boy Color palettes for regular Game Boy games that much. But I'm just going to play in black and white right now because I kind of like playing that way too. I wanted to play Kirby Dream Land 2 for a bit because... You replaced my battery in this last weekend.
Yep.
And this is one of the first games that I lost my saves in, I think. I actually want to, hopefully I can switch this without bumping the cartridge. I wanted to switch to my my Hori Game Boy Commander controller, which is like I find my I actually like the console that's in the center of my couch here. You know, I kind of keep a lot like my best controllers and the controllers I find myself using a lot. And I actually graduated this controller to center console status because I really like this controller. It just feels really good for playing original Game Boy games.
Retro Morgan's saying, what brand of batteries do you use? CR2032s with tabs. Get them from Console 5. They sell the Panasonic ones. The save game episode that I'm working on right now has stuff about changing the batteries, but then it's mostly about backing up your saves or moving your saves between different platforms. I'm just not sure how long it's going to be because it's kind of gone back and forth between... First I was going to put as much as I could in there, and then it kind of went over to like, well, maybe I'll just like cover like cartridges, but now I'm kind of back into putting everything that I can in there as I'm kind of rewarding stuff. And I felt like I kind of got on the weeds with stuff like about the retrode, and I don't need to get too crazy, and I could just like condense it down.
Yeah, I mean, because it's basically click and drag in terms of the operation.
Right. I just want to get into like cool stuff that you can do, because I mean we experimented with stuff, and I have even more since then. You know, just taking saves from one place, you know, from like an EverDrive, and copying it onto the cartridge. So I mean that's a side of it. And you know I'm constantly finding new options. Joe Rediford just like linked me to something of this brand new homebrew thing that came out that does Game Boy saves and Game Boy Advance saves, which is good because the retro Game Boy Advance or Game Boy Player adapter does not do Game Boy Advance stuff. So, and I, from what I understand, I haven't gone into it too much, but I am told that the Game Boy interface actually has a way can dump and restore save games. So I haven't experimented with it yet. Actually, what's kind of interesting is like there's a lot of different things that I didn't even know about that I've been discovering. You know, the like dumping saves from an NES game can be done with the NT Mini because it has copy nests on it, but getting things back onto the cartridge is a whole other thing. But then, you know, I was talking to Bunny Boy about it, and if you hook the ABS up to a PC, you can run the scoreboard software, and you can dump and write saves back to the cartridge. But he had like made some changes lately, or like a while back, and never checked to see if that feature broke. So I wasn't able to get it to work right. So I sent him some save files. They were you know, that you had dumped already, and sent him a save file that I had dumped from the ABS. So he's gonna try and fix it by the time that the episode is.
Oh,
is
a save file I dumped with the NT Mini.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
So he's gonna try and fix that before the episode is ready. If not, I'll just say that, you know, it's possible. But there's not a lot of options for the NES in terms of backing up and restoring saves, which is kind of crazy. I mean there's stuff for backing up, but
I mean I feel like a lot of it could be like due to like the mapper complexity.
Right. But from what I understand, there is a NES adapter coming out for the retro, and it might even be in production right now.
Kirby's Dream Land, huh?
Oh, go ahead.
I was just saying the Kirby's Dream Land 3, or 2, 3, and 64 are kind of considered a trilogy. And I believe they were all the same director. There was like this rumor that I'm pretty sure is not true, but there was a rumor for a while that like the guy who directed Kirby's Dream Land 2, 3, and 64 is dead. But I'm pretty sure it's not true. But there's definitely, like, a lot of similar... There's a lot of similar elements, and one of them is like you can't fight the final boss without like 100% of the game. Like you definitely get kind of a bad ending if you don't get all the rainbow drops in this, especially 64. I remember having a pretty bad ending if you don't get all the what's-its. But in this game, like, you pass through these rooms that have the rainbow drops blocked off by different blocks. You kind of got to figure out, like, which combination of, like, power and animal friend might give it to you.
I do not know when this new batch ships. I know that the first batch is maybe shipping now or very soon. But I don't know when the batch that are up for pre-order right now is shipping. Yeah, I mean... Someone was asking earlier, like, what's your favorite Game Boy or Game Boy Advance game? What is it? Quickly.
Game Boy Advance, maybe Fire Emblem 7. I don't know. I'd have to look at my shelf. I would say Advance Wars 2 if it weren't for Advance Wars Dual Strike on DS, which kind of is almost a replacement for that game.
Yeah. I'm gonna say that mine is probably might be Gunstar Superheroes. It's either that or probably Metroid Zero Mission.
Metroid Zero Mission is also very good. Original Game Boy? I mean, gosh, there's a lot. Probably between Donkey Kong 94 and Link's Awakening.
Yeah, Donkey Kong 94 would definitely be up there for me. I really like the Game Boy version of Bionic Commando. I think that would be up there. For sure. But yeah, I think those are the games that I have. That's probably my two favorite ones.
I generally don't think of Game Boy Color as a separate platform. A lot of people do. I don't. I mean, favorite Game Boy Color game? Like, that's the thing is, I've never really been that passionate overall about like the exclusive library of Game Boy Color.
Mm-hmm.
Like, especially if you're in a game shop, it's like the most miserable thing to look through. I want to get that. Oops. there's an example of, oops. Oh no.
you mean the shortcut?
Yeah, it messed me up. That would be a nice feature option to change the button combination. I always try to make it something that, like, I'm not likely to do on accident. I mean, I know that, like, down and select and similar settings are very common. But, like, I always like to, especially with, like, a Super Nintendo controller, like, I always like to do it something like, like, you know, R and L and select or something like that. I don't know if, like, when you're in Game Boy mode, though, if the, oh, well, if you're in Game Boy mode, I guess it would do, or is it not doing it? Maybe it's because I'm using the Super Game Boy controller. Like, I think, one of the buttons is supposed to stretch the screen.
Oh, that makes sense.
But, I mean, the kind of people that are buying a GBA consoleizer, I don't think are the same people that would want the screen stretched.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I'd rather that, like, use but, that you know, as, like, a hotkey.
It's good they have the option.
Sure, but I think putting, I think if you had the option to put the hotkey on, like, a shoulder button or a combination of, like, R and L plus select, I think would be right. It would be safer. But that's a very standard setting, really.
How long is this game? Because the first one is really, really short.
It's a lot longer than the second game. It's six worlds.
Oh, okay.
Six worlds
Did this come out after Kirby's Adventure?
Yes.
Okay.
This is, I want to say, 94? 93 or 94. Well, it's Super Game Boy Enhance, so it's got to be like 94. I got relatively close to release, I think. Pretty sure it was the first Kirby game I owned, but I played the original game because a couple of my friends had it. I played a whole bunch. But this game has, like, way fewer powers than Kirby's Adventure. But it also has the animal friends, which, you know, so essentially triples the number of possible abilities, because they're all different. But, like, the first couple of worlds only have three levels each, but the later worlds, I think, could have, like, up to maybe five levels each. So it's a bit longer, but it's you know, it's still not, like, a long one.
You know what? I should look at the Kirby's Dream Collection to see what it is like. Now that, I think when I bought it, I didn't know anything about anything. So I'm kind of curious to see how it actually looks.
Oh, you mean, yeah, I don't think anything is 240p in that.
Right, just in the same way that, for some reason, Mario All-Stars isn't either. Even though it's a VC game.
I mean, it supports 480p, but yeah, I'm pretty sure the games on it are not as good as the VC versions. I'm not sure if NES... Adventure is dark on that or not, though.
So I am volunteering at my daughter's field day tomorrow. Do you have field day when you're in school?
Oh yeah. Have the three-legged race. Did you ever do a three-legged race?
Sometimes.
It's where you and a friend put put your legs inside of a
burlap sack,
yeah, so that, like, two of your legs become one leg.
Oh, I see. I mean, I don't know what to expect, but apparently I am running a game.
Oh,
so we'll see how that goes, because I don't think they had enough volunteers. And I mean, tomorrow's my daughter's birthday too, so I thought it'd be really fun. And then there's she's singing in the talent show afterwards, which is something that she had signed up to do and was doing, but, like, didn't mention it until like 2 days ago. So I like this week is my kid's last week of school. So that's why I've been thinking about. Originally, we were going to release the MPU, like a Shot Triggers conversation, next Sunday. And then I was going to have like a regular episode for a week after that.
So we might need extra time.
But I mean, this week is, there's just so much going on between like finishing school and, like different like events related to it. So that kind of takes away like a lot of time that I had to work this week. And then we get into like a normal schedule starting next week. So that's the reason for switching stuff around, I guess. Well, I hope the save game works on there. So the big purchase that I made yesterday was I finally got East 3 for the Genesis, which is the last U.S. released Ease game that I did not have.
Oh wow!
And it's also considered the last or the best version of 3.
Is it really?
Yeah, or of the console version.
I did not know that. For some reason I thought it was not considered.
Yeah, it was $70. The manual is like a little bit rough, but what's kind of funny is that the guy who I bought it from had all these Turbo Graphics games, and including my favorite. TurboGrafx game, Shoulder Blade, and I remember we met him at the Galloping Ghost, and I bought Dragon's Curse from him last year when we were in Chicago.
Oh shoot! Can I go back? Oh, okay.
You ever played that really good shooter on the TurboGrafx Shoulder Blade?
No.
It's actually Soldier Blade, but I thought it was really funny to call it Shoulder Blade. Yeah, they also had I almost bought a long box version of Rayman. Oh, Alex Stewart bought Aerosong from that guy. And there he had a copy of Hellfire on the Genesis, which I was so close to getting. Hellfire is a game that I had when I was a kid, and I got it for Christmas. And there was a point where I thought maybe it was the hardest game I've ever played. And then when I was doing the Mega SG video, it was kind of my first time returning to Hellfire, or Heckfire, if you want to say. If you want to be a little safe about it. I played it for the first time, and I made it through the first level without even dying. I'm like, you know what? Actually, I thought I can do this. It'd be kind of be like overcoming one of those demons, like a demon from my past. I always thought the Hellfire was going to be was too hard for me to play. But maybe it's not so. Maybe it's not so hard. But strangely, Hellfire is way more expensive than I thought it would be. And I kind of, because that I looked it up afterwards, after the Mega SG episode, and it's like $100 or more.
Jeez.
Maybe like in some cases like $150. So I was, and the copy he had there yesterday was $120, and then I was like, I don't know. And then like at the very end, he's like, do you want it? $100? And I was like, I'm not gonna do it. I'm not gonna do it. I'm gonna hold off. Like, I wonder how much if the Japanese version is cheaper.
Did you realize there were 400 people are watching this for some reason?
There's 379 people. Almost 400 people.
Mine
says
409.
Oh really? Ooh. Maybe mine just stopped updating. It seems stuck at 379.
That might be a record for non-Kemptra stream.
Well, when we have something interesting like this to show, I think it gets more people coming out for it.
I can't remember what power I need to get the rainbow drop in this gold.
We probably should have. I mean, I feel bad. We should have just had Woozle on here with us.
Yeah. Well, we kind of. It was somewhat like a last minute. Yeah, it was a somewhat last minute decision.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure we'll play. We'll be playing the Consolizer again. Yeah. Well, definitely.
If he would like to join us.
Yeah, he's
a busy guy too. So.
We'll definitely be playing again probably whenever we actually get an episode done on the Consolizer. So
yeah, and we need to do like that needs to be on the fairly soon side as soon as.
I agree. Yeah, once at least some of the stuff that we're trying to get done is done.
Right.
I think I need stone. But you can't see what you're doing if you don't have the light.
But yeah, I got to see like a lot of people that I hadn't seen in a long time at Cincy Classic, including I got to meet a lot of people who I'd never had a chance to meet.
The fish is so sad when he's in stone form. He's just like, oh. He just feels so bad. I mean, I remember as a kid, like, figuring out how to get the rainbow drops, like, felt like a real, real puzzle. how do I get that one?
I had a lot of fun with Return to Dreamland. Believe it or not, Return to Dreamland was the first Kirby game I ever played.
Like, ever touched, period.
Yeah.
That's so crazy to me.
Yeah, but I mean, I wasn't...
Have you play, other than... You've played through Adventure, right?
Yes.
Have you played through the original?
I played
original?
Through a lot of them. Yes. I don't have this one. And
have you beaten Superstar?
Yes. Sorry. And I've also beaten Dreamland 3.
I hate that Robobot is, like, locked to the 3DS, because that is, like, maybe the best Kirby game. It is so good.
I need to get the new one, too.
Star Allies? I want to replay Star Allies, because apparently, like, all the free DLC made it, like, way better.
Really?
Yeah. Like, it was good, but definitely felt... kind of short on content and maybe a little rushed.
Mm-hmm. I mean, is it as good or? I mean, is it kind of different than the games have been recently?
Like all of those recent games are pretty consistent. You know, Return to Dreamland.
Return to Dreamland was kind of a. It was basically like a return to form, basically.
Well, it wasn't only a return to form. It was it was the first time that the Superstar formula, like in terms of like how the powers work and how the controls work, it was the first time that had even been revisited at all.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
So really quick,
I see it. Oh. Electronic Ash is asking if the M2 guys had any older camcorder footage back when they first started, or any bonus footage on the Blu-ray. And no, they didn't have any stuff. I mean, if they did, they didn't. I asked for like any archival material, and the only thing that they were able to give me is just a photo of the apartment that they were in when they made Gauntlet. And it wasn't like a very good photo, I guess. It was just kind of like looking up through the bushes. You couldn't really see much.
Was that,
I wish there was stuff like that.
Was that the apartment where Hori ate Moss Burger every day?
No. I think it was just the one where they did the Gauntlet.
I'm kind of tempted to see if I can beat this game. Should I switch to something else? What do you think?
Well, how close are you?
I'm like halfway.
I'll switch to something else.
Okay. What about the Super Mario Land Deluxe?
Sure. I've never really seen it in action before.
I played through it. Interesting thing about it, though, is it's got like sort of frame skips that the vanilla version does not have.
Really?
Yeah.
There was a comment on Twitter about the M2 dock, and also on the video itself, saying that the only thing understated in the documentary was just how experienced the people at M2 really were. And that's absolutely true. I almost had a point where I had a bunch of like additional information in the lower third saying like what they had previously worked on. But it just like seemed like so much text. Just to kind of give an idea. Oh, is this the... Oh, yeah. From the... Okay.
Yeah. I played through this a couple weeks ago.
Oh, right,
to record footage for the Hacks episode.
Right.
Well, like,
That'll probably be my next one after. Yeah. Or two episodes from now.
Yeah, well, and I need to record it for the Mario episode I want to do as well.
Yeah.
I really like the look of this. It's really cool. But there's definitely like, you can just see like a lot of frame skips if you know how the game is supposed to look. Like it's just kind of some of the scrolling is a little more jittery, I guess, just because the redrawn graphics probably push it harder in some ways, I guess.
Yeah.
But like because after I finished the game, I put in my original cartridge just to make sure I'm not crazy, and yeah, it's buttery smooth in the same places where I could see it just kind of skipping some frames. But the consoleizer overclocks the system very slightly, so there are no dropped frames. Its frame output is exactly perfect. There's no stuttering, no dropped frames that is added, you know, only any behavior inherent to the game. So Woozle told me that there's a jumper or something on the board that you can configure to not overclock it, but it still needs more testing before, you know, he I guess approves it as a valid way to install the consoleizer.
Yeah, someone's saying they couldn't find the correct ROM to make this. Did you?
I was having trouble too. I was having a lot of trouble. Do you have a copy of this?
Of this hack?
Oh no, of Super Mario.
Of the game, I do. Yeah.
We should see if a dump of.
If I can hack my own ROM.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah.
I could. Oh. Yeah, I mean, I'm not, got like all the Game of Thrones stuff blocked because it's probably over here.
Oh, tonight's the last episode. I'm surprised we've got so many people.
I know. Also, some people are saying there'd be more people if it wasn't on. But I mean, it's. I haven't felt that it's been great. That's okay. I'm less excited than I was before it started. I'll say that. But it's, it is what it is. Trezzy is going to do a video on Mario Hacks. Probably, no, he was going to do a video
It's not going to be Mario Hacks. Mario. Yeah, right. I'm not doing a video on Mario Hacks because, no. it's just not my area of interest. I know that would be a very popular video, but I would not have a lot of fun making it.
is it a low-hanging fruit, you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, it certainly is, but I mean, it's just not a subject I have much interest in. As we've discussed before, like, user-generated content style games aren't that interesting to us. Like, even Mario Maker, for example. Like, I just don't... I kind of maybe a little interest in Mario Maker 2 because it's actually got, like, a story mode.
Oh, okay. Well, that's... Yeah, I mean, like, especially for Mario Maker 2, I'm especially less interested because... Basically, it just seems like all the levels are like, we're just going to make this as impossible as we can so you can see.
Yeah, I mean, because like the levels don't even look like real Mario levels, you know?
Yeah.
They don't play out like real Mario levels. But, no, I'm doing a video about, in that Castlevania video style or the Phantasy Star video style, the best way to play. I'm doing that for, at some point, almost definitely this year, because I started. I was hoping it would be out by now, but we decided to reprioritize. It's just going to be about the best way to play all the 2D Mario games. But I'm not, I'm very specifically sticking to stuff that you could consider Super Mario canon. The Game Boy games could be possibly a little outside that, but I am considering them. But I'm not counting, Wario Land. I mean, that is not to say that, I freaking love Wario Land, but I'm just drawing the line somewhere. I will acknowledge, Yoshi's Island and Super Princess Peach and stuff, but they are not going to be focuses. For the video, because they, I don't consider those part of Super Mario.
Right.
I will count these, and I thought that some of the color hacks might be relevant to that video, but it definitely wouldn't be a focus.
Right. I see. Shibutina was asking if. We're gonna do anything with the Konami Anniversary Collection, and
it's, I would look, love
it's,
to.
It's pretty. It's, yeah, I mean, it'd be cool, but I think it's doubtful for a couple of reasons. I think that it's maybe a little like since it is an M2 thing, I feel like it's
maybe a little too much M2.
It's like a little bit too much, especially after like the Phantasy Star episode and this. I think it's best to we'll let the. Like everyone else kind of do that. Like it's not really something like I think it's just like it's not good for us to do like another video on their work so close to after having done this.
Maybe. I mean, it would probably be a bit more of a priority if it just weren't for the other things that we've kind of prioritized right now.
Right. And you, cause you're working on a documentary right now.
And we just got to get that done.
yeah.
It's just
that's your biggest priority right now.
It's been so hard to juggle the stuff that we shot last year with just keeping regular content on the channel. That's been the biggest challenge, just because we've got so much material shot, but we've got to edit that alongside, you know, keeping the channel alive. So it's been a balancing act, a very difficult balancing act. You know, and in the future, we, you know, when we do documentaries in the future, we really, you know, we've kind of decided, like, we're not going to bite off, you know, more than we can chew in terms of, like, just, you know, like, oh, let's shoot a whole bunch of projects. We'll try to shoot them as we have time to do them. Whenever possible.
So that we can just get them done as soon as...
Yeah. And that way we can enjoy doing our regular content, you know, without feeling like it's like an emergency all the time.
Right. That's what it feels like right now. It's like, it feels like that's like the modern doc that we previewed like a long time ago. And we
kind of like two separate things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, that's your, like, you're working on that. So I'm the one that's like kind of doing all the channel stuff, even though you might appear in stuff, that's basically going to be
you're handling the relegated work.
Once you're on cam, and then, you know, you give it to me, and then I do the rest.
Yeah, I mean, but once we're back on track, I just noticed that the Streamlabs ticker was hidden. Oops.
Uh-oh.
Well, not the pop-up, but the ticker one.
Oh, I see.
I don't think you've missed any donations, unless the pop-up was working incorrectly or something. But no, like, I would love to be in a position where we, like, anytime, like, some sort of, like, new, like, major,
compilation or
something like comes out, I'd love to be in a position where we could just like, when that hits, like, we can just do it. I would love to be in a position to do that.
Right.
But right now, we're just kind of trying to clear our plates.
Right. Like, I don't know when the documentary that we've already shot. Like, I have, like, two that I really would like to get done. Mm-hmm. Very on the soonish side, which might even happen during that time when you're still working on this.
Yeah, episode. I mean, if they won't take long, which they shouldn't, because, like, when I did the Tom Du Bois one, and that one was... I mean, that one took, like, a week and a half of work, honestly. I mean, they were long days, but it came together much more quickly than I imagined. Because the story just came out of it so easily and naturally.
Yeah. What's kind of interesting, though, is that the M2 documentary is basically, like, the culmination of the idea that we had when we started the channel.
Yeah.
Where we wanted to talk to a game developer about their games.
Really?
And, like, many people about it.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
That's, like, the encapsulation of the show that we wanted to make when we...
Right. I mean, in a lot of ways, though, like, so much better than I ever dreamed we would be able to achieve.
right.
It's so funny because I don't know if we were necessarily thinking about it in those terms when the opportunity arose, but it was just like, I don't know, it's like, it's almost like all of these things that we've gotten to do,
I mean, like, they've happened because of other stuff that we've done.
Right, but it's worked toward this dream that we had, like, almost organically. Like, it's not like we, like, had this written, like, we were like, yeah, we want, like, my life in gaming to be about talking to other people and telling their stories of, you know, their life in gaming. You know, but, like, it's not like we were, like, always, like, you know, checking where we were, you know, month to month and achieving that goal, you know? And it just kind of happened, I guess, because that was, like, what we wanted to do, you know?
Right. But it's crazy to think about it like that. Yeah, I mean, it's... So hopefully, I mean, I would love the opportunity to do more stuff like that, especially, like, on Japanese game developers. I think think would be really cool.
And we learned, like, or especially you did, you learned a lot about how to optimize a workflow for...
Yes. 100%.
For,
yeah.
For doing something on a show.
Yes.
I think after I finish the projects I'm on, I'm going to kind of start to look into, you know, learning some Japanese myself. You know, I don't necessarily intend to get to, like, interpreter levels or nothing, but, like, enough to, you know, on one hand, play some games, and enough to, like, listen to an interview and be like, okay, like, they're talking about this part here, and then they're talking about something else here, we can cut this part, you know?
Right.
Like, just that would be helpful. But, you know, I'm sure neither of us are probably going to ever, you know, put enough time into Japanese that we could completely do without a professional interpreter or translator. But you know, enough to make it a lot easier for us to maybe do Japanese stuff kind of regularly. I mean, I'd love to.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I've learned certain words to look out for.
Not a whole lot.
Yeah, I mean, there's certain things that I've learned to look out for, though. It makes it much easier to pace things, just like words that can be cut and stuff like that.
Mm. Like they're equivalent.
I mean, it can't be stated enough that... especially the work that the Alex Highsmith did, Shmupulations, on the localization of everything, just it really brought everything home. There was a point where I wasn't even sure if I had something, and you know, because I had built everything based on what our interpreter, like during the interviews, had told me, and I was hoping.
But you're like, well, I don't know, like at what point they're talking about that. This stuff, or it was right. I mean, it was like, you know, we knew what was said during this part, but like in terms of how each person said it and what the timing of all that was, it was, you know, until we had like final translations written, like we just
right. And it was, you know, when he said, "Oh, there's a lot of information here that is." Is not in, you know, they're kind of like a rough.
Yeah, the live interpretation, which is, I mean, that's what you would expect. You know, you're
right.
You know, you're getting a summary of what they said.
Right.
Which is really
it makes sense.
Yeah, I mean that's
yeah because you need to keep things moving for one thing, and you know our. Our interpreter at the time, you know, for like some of the later interviews, wasn't quite sure like the kind of things that we were asking, you know, stuff about like input latency.
And yeah,
stuff like that.
I mean, there was definitely some technical stuff that would have been challenging for anyone to.
Yeah, once Alex looked at it and he says, "Oh, there's this other information,"
because he's a shmup guy.
Yeah. He's a shooting game fan.
Yeah, which those people know all about input latency, and you know they're very technically minded fans.
So yeah, I mean it's like once I got his translation back, I was like, this is actually kind of awesome how much other stuff there is in here, and it's stuff that I'm really interested in putting in there. So I mean that was pretty excited. I miss the level 2 music.
I like this music too. I mean, I like all the music in this game. I mean, this is just a good soundtrack.
But I love that second level. And I had never even played far beyond this game until I got a 3DS and I got it.
Have you beat it? Yeah, you beat it. Because you know the the ending theme, which is one of the greatest pieces of music ever composed. I really was tempted to use the ending music for this game instead of the ending theme at the end of this end of the Game Boy video.
There was one comment saying I really miss having your theme in the video, in the M2 video. And that's like the first time it's never appeared.
Maybe since like some of the early experimental stuff, maybe.
Right. Well, I mean, since we found the since we had the theme song in there, or we decided to just use it.
Well, like the How to Beat stuff doesn't happen.
Right. But that's we're not even barely in that anyways.
Yeah.
Like I wouldn't consider that as like a typical like My Life in Gaming thing.
No. Like I definitely had an idea at one point that like the full version of the theme, like what we have at the end of the Night Trap credits, like I definitely had an idea that it would be cool to end every documentary with that. Which, I mean, that could still be a valid idea for some things, but I mean the music that Sir Flash made for documentary is just like, oh my gosh, it's one of the best things about it, if not the best thing about it. I mean that opening theme with the credits right over it, like, just gets me so hyped up.
Yeah, and he's also he's selling that. If you like the music in it, you wanted to help support it, he is selling the music on his Bandcamp. It's his own album. And if you buy it, I think it's like $4 for the whole album. I think it's like 16 songs. But if you buy it, it unlocks 4 more songs.
Oh.
So you get 20 songs. I don't know what the remixes. They're remixes, but I'm not sure exactly what they are. But yeah, I mean his music is like, along with the translation, those are the things that just like really made it work.
And I mean, you had basically built the whole thing without having the final translation. And you ultimately didn't have to change that much. I mean, you streamlined a whole lot because you realized that you had a lot of redundant information. So you were able to streamline quite a bit. But, like, it was... I mean, I would say you had a very good vision for the story, but you just weren't sure...
if it was going to work.
If it was going to work. But you... Well, you made it work, you know, even in spite of not having... the final translation, like it worked on its own even without that, but then the final, you know, localized translation really made it like
it just made it make
it made it flow. The writing had, I feel like the writing had a lot more I feel like their personalities came through more in the writing, because you can see it on their faces, but like,
right.
It was really hard to tell before. But like, I love like Hori in the documentary. Like it's so fun to just see these like moments of like intense excitement. His eyes just like light up, and he's just like.
Really
Gradius, you know, Castlevania, Contra, we love those.
Oh, we got a 99-cent donation from Charles Schistler.
Thank you.
So I saw someone post something about how Hori has a Star Wars Arcade T-shirt on, and they're like, "Oh, I hope that's like a secret hint for something." As far as we know, it's not. We just know that. I believe that.
I think it's like.
Arcade,
I think
is like his favorite game.
I think it's his favorite game. Yeah, so that's probably why he wore it that day.
Yeah.
He
which is kind of a cool thing to do. We actually shot some Star Wars Arcade footage because Mike Micah has a Star Wars Arcade machine like in his basement.
Oh yeah,
and we got it, but we couldn't get the vectors to show up right because it was so dark in the inside the cabinet because it's like under all this stuff. You just couldn't get it to show up in a good way, and we didn't know if we were gonna even use it or anything. Yeah. But no, the reason he's wearing it is because it's his favorite game.
Who made it? Is it a Sega game?
No, I mean.
I didn't think so, but like someone the comment said something about Sega Ages. So I'm like, is it a Sega game? I didn't think so.
Oh, about the shirt?
Yeah, someone said like, oh, I wonder if that like is a hint for Sega Ages game.
Like maybe it was a hint. Maybe they were thinking it was a hint for like the Star Wars Arcade. Like the one that came out on the 32X in the arcade version. Not that version. That's like the original arcade version.
Oh, hey, there's a $5 from Kevin Goes Live.
Okay, yeah. It says, hey, Tri, thanks for the Final Fantasy 14 recommendation. I love the game, and I'm psyched for Shadowbringers.
Oh, did you get into it recently on my recommendation? Well, if you are ready for Shadowbringers, then you are already well ahead of me. I actually finally started playing Stormblood maybe a month ago. So I am I'm guessing like maybe a fourth or a third through. I think I'm level 63. So that gives you an idea of my Stormblood progress.
Mike Love Vinny keeps on saying that he loves us. But thank you. The enemy noises in this game are so early Game Boy.
Nothing wrong with that.
Is this the last boss?
Yeah.
I beat it.
Yep. How does Consolizer compare to GameCube Game Boy interface? I haven't done.
I thought you almost said GameCube.
My nose is still a little stopped up. I haven't really done any direct comparisons yet. You know, one thing I will say is I love the Hori pad. So I would definitely like to play GBA games with the Hori pad if I could get my hands on like a GameCube to Super Nintendo controller adapter, which probably doesn't exist. I should probably email Raphnet and say, hey, can you make that? so I can use the Hori pad on the GBA Consolizer. I mean, honestly, I see myself using the Consolizer almost exclusively compared to the Game Boy interface going forward, unless obviously it's for recording comparisons or something. But I do intend to still play Super Game Boy enhanced games, mostly on the Super Game Boy, because I really love those palettes. But with this having access to the default Super Game Boy palettes, which is something a normal Game Boy Color or Game Boy Advance does not have, that definitely makes me want to use this over the Super Game Boy in non-enhanced titles. Don't know if this is already asked, but what's your take on the Game Boy games on the Castlevania collection? I have not played the collection yet. I saw someone leave a comment on the MT video saying that like, oh, the Game Boy emulation is so bad, which I don't know anything about, but here's why I will say. I played Castlevania the Adventure. I played it before. I knew it was a very poorly made game, but it really was apparent how poorly made it was when I played through it recently. I beat the game. It is a very badly made game. like, it really badly. Like, it's got screen tearing, constant slowdown. In fact, I believe the game's default state, this I don't know if this is something that can be improved, but the game's default state, I believe, is running at half speed. If your character is not moving, there are certain screen elements that you will see all of a sudden move faster. But the second you start moving, it, like, chugs. So, there's a vertically scrolling part where, like, I think there's, like, some spikes coming up from the bottom. If your character stops moving, the spikes start moving faster. It's really crazy. It is a badly, badly made game. And I'm hoping that is what people think is bad emulation, because it would actually be very accurate emulation.
I saw we got a $10 donation from our good friend, some stupid Japanese name.
Oh.
Who says, insert Game of Thrones spoiler here. Thank you. It's always fun to know that he's watching. I don't think he comes into the chat at all, but it's cool that he watches.
He's one of your old forum.
He's one of my old forum friends. I've hung out with him many times when we post on the same forum. We had like yearly get-togethers. Whoa, was it raining?
I'm gonna play this for a while, but you know what I'll do after.
Hey, really quick, you do what you're gonna do. I gotta go. I think that it's like raining really hard, and I gotta make sure that the window in my kids' room is closed. We'll be right back.
These must be. Are these user profiles? Okay, I'm going to delete something. I bought this in, I'm guessing this is the main mode. I can't remember where I first saw this game, but I was sort of reminded of it in a GameSack episode. I forget if it was this version they played or if it was the GameCube game, but I bought both of the GBA games. It's Kuren or something like that, and then. Another is like Cure in Paradise, I think. And then GameSack. GameSack looked at Cure in Squash, which is the GameCube one. I just like the idea of how they play. I don't know if in later levels you have control over your rotation, or if that's the sequel. I forget. But I just kind of like the idea of it. I don't know. It just looks like a pleasant thing to play. And they were not expensive. They were somewhere between $1 and $5. I remember that much. At a book off in Kashiwa. It's nice that we can talk now about the towns that we were in, other than Akihabara, obviously. Because, we were staying in Kashiwa, which was, just like a couple of train stops away from Abiko, where M2 is. So... Oh, I see. Oh no. So yeah, I think there were two book offs in Kashiwa. Yeah, well, I didn't want to say what town we stayed in or anything like that, because it's like people would be like, what game developers are near there? It was really fun going to different book offs because they all had very different things.
All right, what'd I miss?
Nothing. I was talking about the book offs. Oh, are you playing
irritating?
Oh, no, it's not irritating stick. It's cure. This game was actually released in Europe. I don't know if any of the sequels were, but it never came out here. After I play this for a while, I'll pop in some Castlevania the Adventure so people can see just how bad it is.
Okay.
Like it is literally a poorly made game.
I feel like such a simple game. It just seems really cool.
Yeah, it just seems like relaxing, right?
Yeah.
It is a similar concept to Irritating Stick.
It is a simpler concept. It almost seems fun in the same way that it's fun to watch when the DVD logo is bounced around a screen. You know what I mean? It has that same kind of effect.
Yeah, GameSack looked like, at...
Yes.
GameSack looked at the GameCube version of this one time.
Oh, okay.
That one, I think, is called Curarin Squash. And the sequel is called... Kura Kura Kurin, which is also on GBA. The second book off that we went to in Kashiwa, the one we went to with Jimmy. Remember, we went to the one book off like early the day after we got there.
Right.
Which is where I found a D terminal cable for the Wii. as well as Wave Race 64 for $1. but the second book off had this. That was where, isn't that second book off in Kashiwa where you bought your Japanese 3DS?
Oh, yeah. I bought the Japanese 3DS specifically so I could play my physical copies of the Sega 3D Classics.
Yeah. Do you have any other Japanese games?
I don't. I don't even know what I would get. Honestly, I bought it specifically just for those. Let's see. Our good friend Gilly the Kid is in the chat. He's wondering if we're going to do a video on the Castlevizer, and the answer to that is yes.
Absolutely. I mean, in terms of tech videos, it's probably, like, in terms of hardware videos that I will be the editor of, at least, it's the top priority. It's just that, like, we really need to get our documentaries, some of our documentary stuff. Just
right.
That we shot last year just like buttoned up.
Right. You can mod your 3DS with I think someone made me a copy of Ocarina of Time that you can install a custom firmware. The thing with the Sega 3D Classics though is that will work and you'll be able to boot up the game. But when you select a game and launch that, then it runs a whole other, boots into that. And that cannot get around the region.
Is there any custom firmware option?
I bet you things have been made now. I bet you there are ones that exist now. But at the time, there was not.
Am I retaining the right way now? There's like little pickups along the way that... don't know what they're trying to do.
Oh
no!
We do not have any info on the Mega Drive Mini in terms of emulation.
Yeah, we don't even know if M2 knew about it at the time we were there. For all we know, they might have not.
Yeah, because we were there, we shot that last June. So, I mean, even at the time, none of the Switch stuff was even out yet.
Yeah, you there is a little bit of Switch stuff in the video, though, isn't there?
Like, well, it's only at the very end. The early
stuff that they did. But the way that you did the ending, I think, is very good. Because it's just kind of looking to the future without really getting into specifics, which it has to be open-ended because they're going to continue making stuff.
Yeah. We didn't have much of a choice, and you know, you just got to find a time to call it, really. I mean, that video has been done and uploaded on our channel since March 1st. But I saw someone said, "Oh, you can get around the region stuff with the firmware." I mean, I'm not sure if they've done anything with the 3D Classics though, because it has like a double boot, I guess. It checks it twice. I don't know if that would require you to like modify the game somehow or something. Either way, I just bought a first generation Game Boy Advance, or not Game Boy Advance, 3DS for the, well, I was there, you know, it wasn't that expensive. I feel like it was maybe like $60, and it's a really nice one. It has screen protectors already on it.
Yeah. And it had a different look to, for our 3DS system to have in our 3DS episode.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It is seen briefly in that. In the 3DS capture episode.
Yeah, a couple of times.
So, would you say this was the best entry in this series? I mean, I kind of want to get the GameCube version or something now.
Yeah, I mean, it's a neat looking game, right?
Yeah.
This is the most I've played. I got the two GBA ones in Japan. They were really cheap.
And someone's saying Power Drift 3D is really good 2D to 3D conversion. Indeed it is. There was one kind of confusing word I think that some people didn't understand in the documentary, and somebody wrote about it on our Patreon, said you know, when they talk about like the Taiken games, and those are the sit down cabinets, like the hang on you can sit on, the sit down outrun, stuff like that, because that's kind of mentioned about the 3D Classics. The Sega Taiken or whatever it is games. So those are the sit down machines. Mm-hmm. The skins for them when say, "What is this craziness we are watching now?" Oh, we got a $1.99 donation from Aaron Marks. Thank you.
Oh. This craziness is a GBA game. Oops. An HDMI with a Super Nintendo controller.
But what is the name of the game again?
Kuru Kuru Kururin. The sequel is, I think, Kururin Paradise, and then the GameCube one is Kururin Squash, I think.
Yeah, it's really raining out. I was not expecting this. Downpour.
I have no idea what the. I need to read up sometime with the pickups do.
It's pronounced Kuru Kuru Kururin. That's what Cheesemeister says. Kuru Kuru Kururu. Kuru.
There. It was like we went through like so many revisions of your voiceover saying Akihabara, and like I was like so convinced that we had it right, but there was like one comment like nitpicking it.
Yeah,
I'm still not sure how you said it wrong. I mean, you know, it's not like, you know, you can expect us to go all you know.
I tried.
You know, some people.
I recorded that line like so many times.
Some people. I mean, John Lenneman is very good at this. Where like when he when he is speaking another language, he like goes like into like full on accent with like that other language, you know. I think it's okay to not. I mean, you know, if it's not a language that you speak, then John does know Japanese, but we don't. So I almost feel like it comes across as like we're trying too hard. If, you know, we go Akihabara. You know, I mean, there's just as many people who would say you shouldn't do that. You know?
Right. Yeah, I mean, I try to get as much red as I could. I mean, I did what I could. I speak English and Japanese, but you kind of have to do that here. You mean just get it right or say it in a certain way? I mean, yeah, I mean,
in Japan, though, like, there is a Japanese way of saying English words that you do have to do because those words are integrated into the language. So you do have to say them. I can understand why you have to say those in the Japanese way.
Yeah.
Well, one thing that I think is...
Like, that's kind of how I did it, is like I ended up saying Akihabara, like they do on the trains. Akihabara. And like, that's how I tried to say it.
Well, I thought it was...
On the train, at least how I remembered
it. What was kind of funny to me about the train announcers is like, you know, they've got the... They announce the stops in both, you know, Japanese and English. You know, so they say the next stop is, but then it, like, they say it in a very Japanese way that was sometimes difficult for me to understand what they were saying. Like, they weren't, you know, if the stop was, Kashiwa or whatever, you know, they said it, you know, it was like the next stop is Kashiwa, you know, it was very Japanese, which, you know, in some cases, not all, most train stops I was able to understand, but sometimes like, wait, what they say? So like, I feel like those English train station voices aren't actually as helpful for the train stops as they seem to be intended to be anyway. But overall, you know, the trains were a pretty easy way to get around. But granted, we had Jimmy with us, you know, half the time or more. So
yeah,
we didn't have to think too hard about it.
Right.
So I'm sure we would have made a lot more mistakes without him.
Holy cow. I mean, I don't even know what this would end up being like without him.
Yeah, Google Maps has all the train info if you have a smartphone. I don't think I realized at the time how much information I could... I didn't realize that was a wall. I don't think I realized at the time how much information I could get from Google Maps there. I was kind of confused by Google Maps because I'm not used to using Google Maps for walking very much. You know, it's always for like driving trips that I'm using Google Maps on. So I was often confused when I was like trying to figure out, oh, like I need to, you know, turn on this street or something, or, you know, I'm going to this building, but where I am going, is it above me? Is it below me? I don't know. Like the verticality of the cities was definitely a bit of an odd thing, I think, at least for me. Like, you know, the thing that always stands out in my mind was when we went with Jimmy it's not takoyaki, I think it's yakitori. The squid one, but the chicken skewers one.
Yeah.
I get yakitori and takoyaki confused. we went to a chicken skewers place with Jimmy because Jimmy wanted to take us to a chicken skewers place. And, yeah. You know, I mean, of course, he wasn't familiar with the immediate area, but, you know, he knew what kind of place he was looking for. And the place that we were about to go to was actually closing. And,
like closing down?
No, I mean, it was closing for the evening. It was because it was like 9 o'clock at night or something. Mm-hmm. And so we went hunting for another one, and Jimmy's like, oh, here's one. And I'm like, you know, there's just like a tiny sign. And
yeah.
And like, there's like nothing else, no other indication of like that it's there. Just like a tiny sign with a picture of a, you know, I don't know what you call it, but it's like this like typical like, it's like some sort of like almost kabuki looking sort of, I don't think it was a kabuki face, but it was some kind of like like stereotypical kind of face on it. And like we get in this elevator like from the outside, you know, it's an exterior access elevator, and we go in, and then at the top of the elevator, like 4 or 6 floors up or something, here's this like hopping chicken joint. Like there's tons of people there like 9 o'clock at night, and like otherwise like the street was like dead. Like there was like so minimal indication of visual indication, at least, of especially as someone who doesn't speak the language, that this place was even there. And like I still like don't entirely know how Jimmy like knew it was there.
Well, you probably just saw a sign. I mean,
yeah, but like, I mean, I'm just like not used to like look for. I'm just like expecting like, okay, the place I'm going to is like accessible from the street, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like if I didn't see it there, if I couldn't see that there was a restaurant there, like I wouldn't have even gone to investigate further. But I guess in Japan, that's like you just know that, oh, you know, it's totally normal for there to be a chicken joint, you know, 6 floors up. It's very vertical. I mean, and the other interesting thing is like a lot of the stores in Akihabara, they, you know, some stores were multiple floors and you would have to like check out on one store, one floor of the store before going to the next.
Got a $2 donation from Blabler. That's good job on the documentary, guys. Thank you.
Man, I can't figure out how to get past that part. I'm going.
You gotta go back. You gotta bounce back.
Yeah, I don't know. Since it's getting close to 11, I'm going to
switch to something else.
I'm going to pop in Castlevania the Adventure so people can see just how bad it runs on real hardware. I mean, it is a GBA, but that it's close enough real hardware.
I'll wait for back before I get into that.
I think people just don't know how poorly made this game is. Yeah, it's pretty bad. It's pretty bad.
There was a comment earlier today about how they said, you know, like, I can't imagine what the crunch is like at M2. And actually, the it's not, like, when they talk about people doing, like, all this extra stuff, it's because they want to.
Yeah.
When he talks about, like, the taking of, like, taking vacation, they've, like, are doing this stuff. They have, actually, it's pretty laid back there. Tokihiro Naito talks about how, like, he can just, like, take all this time off whenever he kind of feels like it.
Yeah, he was, like, he was saying, like, he just, like, kind of comes in when he wants. He, like, goes jogging in the morning.
Yeah, and I think that, like, that's kind of a, it's much different than other studios, for sure. They, and I think that part of that, I think that, like, that's how they get started on a lot of things that they, like, they want to do. Like, they kind of talk about in the interview, the Shot Triggers interview, is that, like, they wanted to do Battle Garaga, and they just kind of did it on their own before, like, even asking to do it.
Oh, we got $1 from D-Win.
Well, thank you. But they said, you know, we just did it because, like, we wanted to make this game, and we showed them, you know, we look at what we've done. Can we, like, do this for real? Mm-hmm. So I think it's not the typical kind of crunch. I'm sure that they've obviously have had times where, you know, they've had to deliver on projects, and that may have been what has happened with, like, certain aspects of the Castlevania collection. Where they had a certain deadline. See, the Castlevania collection, like, a lot of people are complaining about, like, there's it's like certain omissions which just seem kind of bizarre. Like, there's no way to remap your controls.
Which M2 normally is very good about.
Yeah, and the like, the screen sizes are kind of weird. I think that, like, the original and Pixel Perfect options are reversed on certain games.
Oh.
I was surprised that that there's no Japanese soundtrack option for 3, which seems like something that they would.
Well, apparently the Japanese versions are coming out a later patch or something.
Okay, so that's good though.
I think I heard that, but I'm not a source.
But I could understand. Like it seemed weird that, so it's very possible, like, maybe they were like really, really rushed. You know, they didn't have, because, I mean, I think they kind of talk about how they've, like, a lot of times they don't meet their deadline. They, like, are like delayed a little bit.
I think they get away with it because,
well, they do. Yeah, I mean, we got $1.99 from Ken Lung. He says a cool stream. Thank you. But he says, I mean, I think that they're usually, like, they just take their time. And, like, even with Battle Gargas, they say during the interview that it'll be out, like, in 2 weeks, that, you know, they just kept on coming up with ideas of stuff they really wanted to do. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they said, oh, I don't know if we can do this in time, but they ended up doing it. Oh, yeah, another $1 from D-Win. Thank you.
Yeah, as you can see, this game has...
Patrick Felton's like, this is aggressively not a good game.
It's true. It is true. Like, you can see that there's just, like, constant screen tearing, like, all up and down the screen. It moves very slow. I wish I could get to the...
But, yeah, there's that, like, a frame skip. It looks like the animations don't hold as long on certain
frames. And... I don't know if the clock varies with moving. There are definitely parts in the game where if your character is moving, the whole game's... The game's... Or if your character is not moving, the whole game speeds up. So I have this theory that the game is, like, constantly moving at half speed. And they were just like, ship it.
Well, because they had to. This is a launch game? I mean, this has been a launch game.
I mean, it's pretty early, I think, but I'm not exactly clear on when it came out. I remember when I think I've told this story before, when the Game Boy Player came out, I was visiting my aunt and uncle and cousin, and I only had brought Game Boy Advance games with me, and I wanted to try original Game Boy games on it. And you know, I may have had a similar reaction to what people were having with this game on the Castlevania collection, where I had never played it before. At the time, I'm not even sure if I knew there was a Castlevania game on the original Game Boy. And I you know, looked in my cousin's Game Boy pouch, and I saw Castlevania. I'm like, oh, Castlevania! I want Castlevania. And yeah, I popped it in, and I just could not play it past the first screen because it's like so slow and sluggish. So it was a bad first impression for original Game Boy on the Game Boy player for me. You know, so same impression people are getting on the collection, I guess. I mean, it is. Like I say, I've not played the collection, but I strongly suspect people saying the Game Boy emulation is so bad is not M2's fault. I strongly suspect it is because this game is not just not a good game, it is like one of the poorest made shipped games like that I know of. Like, just technically very poorly made, especially from the time period, you know, when, you know, you release a game and it had one shot, you know? You didn't have the luxury of patches.
Right. Tony Galvin is saying, does anyone know if M2 is going to fix Wily Wars on the Sega Genesis Mini?
That would be impressive.
It'll be interesting to see what they do. I mean, you know, it's funny. I did a video for our Patreon and YouTube supporters about like games that I thought were going to be on the Genesis Mini after the initial 10 were announced, and I've gotten a ridiculous amount of them correct. Like even like the kind of obscure things that I kind of felt like had a really good possibility of happening, but people will be like, no, that's never going to happen. I actually had Mega Man Wily Wars on my list and removed it because I was like, you know, I don't think it's going to happen.
Well, is Cotton getting a remake? We got $2 from JF.
Yeah, they announced it yesterday. Coming to all systems. And I think Joe from GameStack told me that they're going to be making like an X60, like a Sharp X68000 version of it.
Is it going to be like a Wild Gun style thing or like an HD remake or what?
I don't know. Like, I don't know if they've shown it yet. Have they actually shown what it looks like? I really need to get Cotton 2 on the Saturn.
Is there something on GBA I should finish off with?
I don't know. You can
Let me go look at my shelf and I'll pick a good finish game.
Okay. Alien Soldier and Pulse Manor games that I thought were going to be on there. I put those on there. But, I mean, I got random... Like, I feel like I got random things like that I would never even... I thought were probably long shots. Like Castle of Illusion I was able to get. It's been kind of surprising. I almost feel like... You know, I thought... I wasn't going to put Mega Man Wily Wars on my list. I mean, I had it on my list and removed it because I was like, that's actually like, since it's three games, like, would that throw their number off?
This is always one of my favorite games just to pop in for a quick bit.
Does the full kit come pre-built? I don't know.
This is actually...
I think... Oh, go ahead.
This is skating board is my go-to... we'll see it in videos from time to time. This is my go-to...
like scrolling, like stutter.
Scrolling, stutter. I mean, obviously, I'm sure the stream is not going to look perfect. But you know, I can tell by looking at at my TV that there's no dropped frames, no scrolling stutter, nothing weird going on. And that's because of, like I said, the very slight overclock, so that each frame update matches 60 hertz. Mm-hmm. Which I need to check what the situation is on Game Boy interface, because I don't know to what extent anything might be may or may not be converted in terms of speed or anything on, especially on like the speedrun or high fidelity modes. I'm not sure. I think the standard version, at least the last time I used the standard version, it does like a frame blending thing to mm-hmm. sort of match the output. Which doesn't look wonderful in a lot of situations, but overall that version looks pretty decent. Aside from the kind of ghosting, I guess you could get used to it. Yeah, I think I came up with another possible scrolling stutter test on GBA or the original Game Boy. I forget. I also use the first long hallway in Metroid 2 to show like original Game Boy scrolling stutter.
Yeah, it's the fact that the Genesis Mini is going to have some of the more rare games on the system is, you know, it's a big deal. It's a big deal, and it's very clear that they're kind of seeing this as like their last one. I mean, I think there was a point where, and I think this is what Sony was going to try to do, where you don't put all your best games on it, and then you try and sell a new one the next year with different games on it. And I don't think the Nintendo did that, because I mean, when you see how many of these things have sold, I don't see somebody buying the same one with different games in it. So I think it's smart just to say like, okay, so it's just gonna be one. It's gonna have really good stuff on it, and that's gonna be it. Do our best. We'll give it everything we got for that first one. But I think Sony was thinking the other way around. Like, oh, we'll do a DualShock version next year. But that's not happening.
No.
Unless they go a different route and really get somebody to do a good job on it. I mean, who knows? That might be possible. Oh, yeah. I mean, what do you think is more difficult for them to overcome? You know, I mean, Sega's gonna be is maybe not for the general populace, but among the people that have like that know these that knew how bad the at games were.
Yeah.
That they're able to be like, okay, I'll buy this new one
because
I know it's gonna be good. I mean, I'm excited about the Genesis Mini.
Yeah.
I mean, even though I have most of the games on it anyways, I just think
I
think they're cool to have. Like, you know, just like the box. How the box looks like this. But if they did do like a new PlayStation Classic, but they just made it really good. That's their main. That's what they got to do at this point. If they're gonna do another one, they got to give everything that they can have, that they got. I know. I wish they were doing the Altered Beast box, because that's one That's the one I have. It is cool that Mega Man is on there. I remember playing it on Sega Channel and being like, I mean, I love these games on a Nintendo, and like, these are so much better. not really. Because I didn't own any of them. No. I'd always rent them.
Well, if they somehow make it 60 frames, that would be crazy. But I'm kind of guessing it's not in the scope of the project. But hey,
who knows?
Who knows?
I have the GameCube version. This is the GameCube version any good?
It has an emulation of this. I've never played the GameCube version, but it has an emulation of the original game.
Oh. It has this version in it?
It has this game in it. I don't know how well it's emulated, though.
Huh.
I mean, I assume it's an emulation, not a port. I'm pretty sure it's like presented like a
That'd be kind of interesting to look at. I mean, I think that's something we had talked about. Isn't that like an episode we had talked about? Games that had entire other games inside of them?
Oh, yeah, we may have had that idea a while back or something like that.
Because I wanted to do something, because that was when I was like talking about the Quake 2 that came with...
But the thing is, the GameCube game, like, that's like almost the main meat of the game. It's got like... I think it's got some... original, like, sort of mini games or maybe even multiplayer type stuff built into it, but mm-hmm. I've never played the game.
Well, I haven't. Maybe I should try it sometime and see how it is. But that'd be kind of a fun episode. I forgot about that.
Yeah. We want one more, then I guess we're
done. Have you've completed this game 100%?
Yeah, I have. It was a while ago, though.
Yeah, I haven't bought a PlayStation Classic yet either. I mean, if it was like $24.99, I would definitely do it. Oh, I don't know. Does it really? I think I knew that. Somehow, like the Arnold Palmer's Tournament Golf has Fantasy Zone in it.
But like you're talking like it has the literal entire game.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it has it. I'm pretty sure that.
But that's what you want the episode to be.
Yeah. I mean, like Panzer Dragoon Orta. Has the entire first game in it.
Mm-hmm. Didn't 8-Bit Do just announced a wireless kit for PlayStation controllers that you could use in original controllers or the classic controllers.
Really?
So that might actually be a decent incentive.
Does that mean there's a PlayStation retro receiver coming?
I don't know. Like, I mean, obviously you could use it with other retro receivers or with a computer.
Yeah, I didn't even see that. I didn't know that.
I mean, they don't... They made Genesis kits too, right? But there's no Bluetooth receiver for Genesis, right?
There is now, yeah.
Oh, they did make one?
Uh-huh.
But it is Bluetooth. It is a Bluetooth kit, right? It's not 2.4.
Yes. Right. Interesting. I had no idea they announced that. That's pretty cool. I've never even... I thought that the wireless kits were hard to find in general.
Oh, I don't know. But I think that was like yesterday or the day before that. So.
Oh, JF donated $2. Oh. Thank you. He says the Panzer Dragoon remakes may be at E3, by the way. When is E3? I don't even know.
Probably less than a month.
Yeah. It shows you how on top of it I am. It's gonna be weird without any Sony, though.
I know, I mean, I think Microsoft and Nintendo will be interesting, but, like, not having Sony there definitely feels pretty weird.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, Sony was pretty boring last year. I mean, it was just a bunch of stuff we already knew existed.
Right. I mean, a lot of people complain about that.
And their conference was weird.
Yeah.
It might have been cool if you were there, but like for the home audience, it was just a very boring.
Right. I think that once they did that, they kind of realized that maybe we won't do one this year. Realize how good they had it. Dave B is mentioning the Grandia HD, which I totally forgot.
Oh, yeah. It's supposed to be both the first two games, right?
Yeah, but I mean, the second one wouldn't take a lot to make HD. I think that there's already a PC
There's already version. A PC version, yeah. I don't know how it is, but...
But it's the first one that...
That would be a challenge.
I like the first level. Yeah.
My biggest concern would be, would they actually keep the, would they keep the original, the original voiceovers? Because that's like half the appeal of the game to me. I love the very cheesy voiceovers.
Yeah.
So I've got, you can see on my file here, I've got the flowers on all of the minigames.
Mm-hmm.
Which means I did something. But I remember that was part of 100%ing the game. So this game is definitely 100% complete. So. All right. Well, that was fun.
Yeah.
I want to play more Kuru in though. Maybe I'll add that to my now playing and just keep at it. I need to look up what some of those item pickups are though.
Alright.
So yeah. Well, thanks everyone for watching. Thanks Woozle for stopping by the stream if you're still here, and we'll definitely try and get you on after we get a proper episode released.
And thanks to everybody who hung out and donated. And thanks for everybody for enjoying the video today. It's very nice to be able to have a response like that after waiting for so long.
Yes.
After sitting on it for so long and working on it for so long.
Yep. And just as a reminder, we will have some extra standalone Blu-rays, but we need to come up with the packaging for it. And we don't know when we're going to have the discs, and we don't know when we'll have them packaged, and we don't even know how many there will be.
Right.
But, you know, that will be a thing available in the future.
Yep. I mean, because the Blu-rays are being packaged in the Battle Garaga edition in the...
Saturn cases.
In the Saturn sale, yeah, the jewel cases. So we're basically getting a spindle of discs. So we're gonna
package them.
Yeah, like regular Blu-ray cases and artwork made, original artwork and all that stuff.
Yep. So you know, I'd love to get that done this summer, but
I'm going to be pushing for it, because once we have it, I mean, we kind of already have something out for someone who's going to handle the packaging, and just, we just don't know how much it's going to cost us, I guess.
Yeah. So. All right. Well,
nice. Yep. We'll see you soon.
Well, see you next Sunday for sure.
Yep. Take care, everybody.
Tune in.